Hello, this is Don.
Hi, this is Mike and Lori and everybody else in Victorville.
Okay, we're all present. We have a quorum. We have Bishop, Truckee, and Rosemont, and now Victorville, and of course, South Lake Tahoe.
And Sacramento.
We'll open the meeting at 3 o'clock. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the regular meeting of the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, La Hontan Region. My name is Don Jardine. I am from Markleville, and I serve as the chair's board, the board's chair. The board is conducting this meeting using teleconference equipment, permitting board members and the public to participate from Bishop, Truckee, Rosemont, Victorville, and South Lake Tahoe. Board members participating from Bishop is Peter Pumphrey.
Hello.
Hi, Peter. Board members participating from Truckee is Dr. Amy Horn and Eric Sandell.
Hey there.
Hello.
Hi. Board member participating from Rosemont, Pete Dias. Unfortunately, Jack Clark is unable to attend due to illness, but we're looking forward to seeing him. I am participating from South Lake Tahoe. The executive officer is Patty Ko-Yumjin. Patty, would you please introduce the staff participating on the call?
Yes, I will. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In Tahoe are myself, Patty Ko-Yumjin. Richard Booth is here. Sue Genera, our board clerk, is here. And Chuck Curtis. Kim Niemeyer is joining us from Sacramento. And staff from our Victorville office, I'm going to let them introduce themselves since I can't see them.
All right. Thank you, Patty. This is Lori Kemper. I'm the assistant executive officer. And we have in the Victorville office, we have Mike Plasiak, Patrice Copeland, Cindy Mitten, Jay Cass. Those are our seniors in the Victorville office. And then we have Gassem Porgasemi, John Morales. And we also have three gentlemen from CH2M Hill. Four gentlemen, the suns of my eyes, from CH2M Hill in Fort Irwin, and Kevin Sullivan from PG&E are in the room right now.
Thank you. The regional board will be considering first public forum, then uncontested calendar, then executive officer's report, then closed session during this meeting. Although we must use our time wisely, we encourage your input on any item so that our discussion will be based on all available information. Because this meeting is being conducted as a teleconference, a roll call vote will be used for all items requiring an action by the board. If you wish to speak on any agenda item, please wait until comments from the public have been requested. I will then ask any members of the public to identify themselves if they wish to speak on an item. Although we do not administer an oath in most proceedings before this board, we expect all statements made before this board to be truthful, with no attempts to mislead by false statements, deceptive presentation, or failure to include essential information. We also ask you obey our ground rules, which are: treat everyone with respect. This includes board members, board staff, anyone who testifies, and your fellow citizens. This means no personal attacks and no violent, contentious, or disruptive behavior. In the interest of everyone's time, please communicate your ideas clearly and efficiently. So that we can develop an accurate administrative record, we ask that you speak only after you are recognized. At that time, please come to the telephone, state and spell your first and last name, and your affiliation before speaking to the agenda item. If you do not follow these rules or become repetitious, I may ask you to end your presentation. Any person aggrieved by any action or inaction of the regional board, including but not limited to the issuance, modification, or rejection of waste discharge requirements, administrative civil liability, or a cease and desist order, may petition the State Water Resources Control Board to review the decision. The State Board must receive the petition within 30 days of the Regional Board's meeting at which the action was taken. Board staff will provide you with copies of the regulations about filing petitions if you request them. They are also available on the State Water Board's State Water Resources Control Board website. Our first item of business is a public forum. Is there anyone at the Bishop meeting location who wishes to address the board during the public forum?
No, there's not.
Is there anyone at the Truckee meeting location who wishes to address the board during the public forum?
No one here.
Is there anyone at the Rosemont meeting location who wishes to address the board during the public forum?
No, there is not.
Is there anyone at the Victorville meeting location who wishes to address the board during the public forum?
Don, this is Lori. Yes, there is. Kevin Sullivan from PG&E would like to address the board.
Hi, this is Kevin Sullivan from PG&E. I moved close to the microphone, so I hope you all can hear me. I've presented to you before at meetings in Barstow. I want to thank you for your time today, and I will keep this very brief. We wanted to give you a regular update on the Hinckley remediation project. We continue to make progress. The remediation activities, both the containment, treatment pumping, and the core in situ treatment are continuing and are being expanded. And since we last spoke face-to-face, we have also installed the first whole house water treatment unit. So that was a nice milestone that we've crossed. I had prepared remarks that I was going to send around to you so you could follow. Many of them were made moot yesterday. I'd like to talk a little bit about the background process and the peer review process. Yesterday we got an email from Ann Holden that had the first formal response to our background plan that was submitted in February. We were getting a little anxious as to where that had gone, and I want to kind of publicly thank Ann for her continued efforts on this and the direction that she's taking the background review, soliciting input from both the CAC IRP manager, the Community Advisory Committee IRP manager, as well as from the USGS. We welcome that. We think that's a great development. And what I'd like to talk about is the need to continue and, in our opinion, expand that process. The background work is critical to everything else that gets done at Hinckley. It is critical to plume delineation work that has to go on. We can't define a plume if we don't know what the right background number is. And we also obviously can't affect final cleanup actions until we know what the right background number is. The thing that I'd like to ask of the board and of the executive officer today is that we think it's very important that a technical working group, not simply a peer review, is established. A review of the record will show that any investigation will contain scientific surprises and unanticipated data or information. PG&E truly wants to have a background determination that everyone can buy in and support. And in order to do this, we believe we need a real-time scientific team to make decisions about investigation direction, interpretation methods, and the like in real time. The need for such a panel is clear. We cannot simply rely on a static work plan. During the earlier background study in the 2005-2006 timeframe, when PG&E faced conditions that forced deviations from the work plan, we were forced to make what we thought were reasonable scientific judgments. These judgments were originally accepted by the Water Board, but only years later, when a peer review was done, these judgments were called into question. And we don't want, and we don't think anyone, any of the stakeholders want that same thing to happen again. So even with this real-time review, it's likely that the scientific process, the act of defining the work plan, drilling the wells, and sampling them, will take close to 2 years. That's a long time, but if it's done right, it's manageable. However, if we hypothetically add in an iterative, go out for peer review comment, get comments from independent peer reviewers, respond to them, try to resolve things in a formal, written, back and forth sort of way, we think this work could drag on for several years, and we don't think that's in the interests of the project, the community, PG&E, or the board. So I'll point to the fact that we've had a basic plan on the table for 9 months, and we haven't, you know, moved the ball out into the field. So what I'd like to ask of the board and of the executive officer is that we continue to build on the progress that staff has made by reaching out to the USGS and to the CAC manager, and direct staff to set up a regular scientific technical advisory committee. We suggest it should meet monthly at first, and then perhaps later every other month or quarterly, in order to get the background work plan hammered out, and then importantly, to provide real-time review of the work and the data as it develops. PG&E is prepared to underwrite the cost of this exercise by whatever means the board feels is necessary, through an escrow account or by a, you know, billing through our current reimbursement. And importantly, we think that once this panel is established and brought up to speed and able to ask their own questions about the Hinckley site, that they become a vehicle for review and discussion of other key technical questions at the site, such as plume delineation, byproducts, and the secondary effects of whatever remediation is ultimately chosen. So thank you for your consideration of these requests. We think this can be very simple, and we're very anxious to get moving. And I'd also like to let you know that I'm hoping at some future meeting to provide you with a short presentation on some of these key items at the site when we're face-to-face. We'll save that for some time in the new year when you're down here. Thanks again for considering these remarks.
Kevin? First, I'd like to ask any board members if you have any questions. First, Peter, do you have any questions?
I don't have any questions. I just observe it takes a brave man to use the word Hinckley and simple in the same sentence.
Keith, do you have any questions?
No, thank you.
Dr. Horn, do you have any questions?
My question is for our executive officer, what is the process for responding to a request like this?
Well, I'd like to understand the request in more detail, and I welcome, as I do with anyone, to meet with anyone who has requests for technical assistance or working together in a cooperative manner. So I would be happy to sit down with PG&E and anyone else to better understand the proposal.
And Dr. Horn, this is Lori Kemper, the Assistant Executive Officer. I just want the board to know that Ann Holden, our geologist in our Tahoe office, has been exploring some alternative ideas because she was under direction from the board at the last time we met on the topic of the background study when PG&E presented their proposal for background study. She was pursuing setting up an independent scientific peer review of PG&E's proposal. And in the process of putting together, you have to put together a very formal request and come up with topic issues and questions. And we were hoping to bring the same people that had done the peer review on PG&E's past background study. We wanted to bring them into the mix for this independent peer review. And we work through the state board contact, Dr. Jerry Bowes in Sacramento, and he, in discussions with Ann, they've kind of reached this conclusion that, pretty much what Kevin was saying, that a formal process is cumbersome because it doesn't really allow for an exchange of ideas. And so Ann is now looking at ways to potentially bring the same people or some of the same people into a different kind of arrangement where they are part of a technical scientific working group or a panel where we can actually have them help make adjustments to PG&E's plan and address specific concerns. So she is exploring that idea already prior to Kevin bringing it up. But it's things seem to be aligning, and so right now where she's at, and one of the things she kind of had come to the conclusion was that in talking to our the guy who coordinates the contract in Sacramento, that they've come to the conclusion that we already had comments and questions from Dr. Ian Webster through the Community Advisory Committee, And we had also asked the USGS to look at PG&E's proposal, and those two have already provided comments and questions to PG&E, and just, well, they presented them to us, so we just forwarded them to PG&E, and we basically said, go ahead and take a, you know, revise your work plan to address these specific questions and clarifications, and then from there, we'll bring in, the idea is to bring in the peer reviewers that were a chemist and a geologist and a statistician potentially, and have them then look at the revised plan and potentially get them on some kind of retainer or contract where they could come to Hinckley and address the community and, you know, and kind of have a working group engage the public. So we're headed up down that path right now, and we can continue to work with PG&E on some ways to creatively fund this. I think there's some money the state has, but we could potentially set up an account, set up separate agreements, or work through Project Navigator, and they're the contractor for the Community Advisory Committee, and they could potentially subcontract some of these individuals, too.
Based on what you've just said, Lori, it sounds to me as if staff has already made the decision to do something like what PG&E has asked for today.
Exactly, and I think that just as Kevin would like to talk about it in more detail in the future, we were planning to update the board. We weren't planning to have this conversation today per se, but we were planning to bring these concepts and ideas forward to our January meeting that is scheduled to be in Barstow.
And this is Kevin again, just to be, I believe in some ways we're in violent agreement here. and what we're really looking for is to look to the board and to, you know, senior management to basically provide and some help and guidance to try to get this to a collaborative place where we can sit down and exchange ideas rather than a ping pong type of write, review, comment, because we think we can solve things a lot quicker by that collaborative process.
Okay. Dr. Horn, do you have any further questions?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Eric, do you have any questions?
Most of my questions have been answered by the conversation and comments that have come before. I assume that perhaps Ann would be the administrator for this, or somebody from the board would be the administrator for this?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. No, it sounds like it's a great idea. It sounds like there are going to be any number of practical difficulties in getting all of these people together in one room, since it will have to be a teleconference, but I think we should go ahead with it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
Absolutely. There's no one at South Lake Tahoe meeting location to address any of the issues regarding public forum.
Don, also, this is Lori. I just want to let you know that Logan Olds from Victor Valley Wastewater Authority has entered the room here in Victorville.
Okay. Our next item of business is the adoption of the uncontested calendar, items 2 through 5. Is there anyone at the Bishop meeting location who has a public comment?
No, there is not.
Is there anyone at the Truckee meeting location who has a public comment?
No, there's not.
No, none from me.
Is there anyone at the Rosemont meeting location who has a public comment?
No, there is not.
Is there anyone at the Victorville meeting location who has a public comment?
No, there is not.
And there's no one here at South Lake Tahoe who has a public comment. could I have a motion?
This is Kim. We should just check to make sure none of the board members want to pull anything off of the consent calendar.
Okay, I'll go first to Peter. Would you like to pull anything off the consent?
No.
Keith, would you like to pull anything off the consent?
No, I do not.
Dr. Horn, would you like to pull anything off the consent?
No, I have a question for staff. Are there any late revisions?
Not to the 3 consent items. This
okay.
is Patty.
Any further questions, Amy?
Nope.
Eric, do you have any questions?
I had some questions initially. They were answered by staff. Thank you, staff, and so I'm ready to vote on it.
Okay. I'll call for a motion.
I move that we adopt the consent calendar.
I'll second it.
Who seconded?
Eric.
Okay. Motion by Dr. Horn, second by Mr. Sandell. I'll do a roll call vote. Mr. Pumphrey.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Dias.
Aye.
Dr. Horn.
Aye.
Mr. Sandell.
Yes.
And myself is aye. I'll move to our next item. Our next item of business is item 6, the Executive Officer's Report.
Good afternoon, Chairman Jardine and all the board members throughout the state. I'm Patty Kuyumjun, your Executive Officer. I want to update you on a few items of interest. A written report's in your agenda packet on activities of interest to you throughout the regional board that we're working on. Also, just to mention to you, there was a revised item sent out to the board and the public, and that is an update on enforcement actions as part of the quarterly report. As part of my presentation at the end, I'm going to ask Mike Plasiak, our supervising engineer geologist from the Victorville office, to give us an update on the dairy activities in the southern part of the region. A written report is in your packet, but Mike will give you some additional information. Also, Lori Kemper, our assistant executive officer, will be giving you the quarterly violations report after Mike. I'm expanding our quarterly report to include more information about enforcement cases that are pending so that the board and the public can see what items we're considering that may come to the board. We sent, as I said, the revised summary this morning. And we welcome your questions and guidance on the quarterly report at the end of my presentation. And Lori will tell you more about that. As part of my report, I also wanted to let you know that in January, some of our standing reports will give you updates on PG&E's cleanup progress and updates on LA Sanitation Districts 14 and 20. Those will be written reports. As for board meetings, I wanted you all to know that we've made some changes in the board meeting schedule for next year to accommodate some scheduling challenges and conflicts. The January board meeting will be pushed back 1 week to the 16th and the 17th in Barstow. This will be a rather full meeting. It will start at 1 o'clock on Wednesday and go into the evening. The evening session will be the EIR on Hinckley. And then it will resume again on Thursday morning and go most of the day. So you will have a full agenda with potentially 2 enforcement actions and a number of other action items. The June meeting, we are also proposing to move back 1 week to June 19th and 20th in Bishop. And as a reminder to our board members, this is when we were going to do a tour of the Bridgeport grazing area as well as Mono Lake. The July board meeting is also bumped back 1 week to July 17th and 18th. I just wanted you all to know of those changes. Another item I'd like to update you on is our Asian Clan press event that we recently had. I participated in a successful multi-agency event on October 30th at Lake Tahoe. We got a lot of really good press throughout the Northern California area as well as some national press. And I actually would like to do more of these kind of press events to highlight the good work done by the regional boards. We were very instrumental in this Asian Clan eradication event. We were partnered with the Lake Tahoe Aquatic Invasive Species Program, a collaboration of over 40 government and private groups dealing with a whole range of invasive species problems. This particular press event focused on the Asian clams. We took quite a few reporters out on 2 boats to see the clam eradication efforts in Emerald Bay. They were able to see the scuba divers basically rolling out mats, rubber mats, augmented by organic material on 5 acres in the Emerald Bay area. It was a kind of exciting project to see. We were very integral to that. We funded the regional board to the tune of almost $500,000 this project, and we funded a total of over $800,000 to Asian clam eradication efforts throughout Lake Tahoe. So these efforts are rather successful. We, like I said, was well received. The nice thing about these mats are that we've purchased is that they're recyclable. Next fall, when these mats are removed and we hope to have eradicated all the clams, we can actually use these mats throughout Lake Tahoe. We estimate 100 acres of Lake Tahoe are infested with these clams, and if we move them three times a year, we can cover 15 acres a year. It's progress. Another item I'd like to update you on is the Water Quality Coordinating Committee meeting on November 1st and 2nd in Sacramento. Our chairman, Don Jardine, along with Dr. Amy Horn, attended this event. It was an annual event that the State Board hosts, where they invite the regional board members from all the nine regional boards, as well as state board members, and then executive management from all the regional boards and state board. I found them to be very informative and very well worthwhile. The focus of this particular WQCC meeting was the Delta and water supply and water reliability. They had a great tour the day before that I unfortunately could not attend, but Dr. Horn attended, and I understand it was very successful and much appreciated by all who participated in on that. The meeting was 2 days long, and it was really a compilation of some very, I think, very interesting and informative speakers and panels. Cliff Reschwalken of the governor's office, his senior advisor, he spoke about the nitrate working group and where they were focusing on disadvantaged communities and lack of drinking water. And the Water Board kicked in $2 million recently from the cleanup and abatement account to help fund some of these drinking water supply issues for these communities who can't get money otherwise to give themselves clean water. There was a great panel on the San Joaquin Delta that went over the science and the issues and the challenges facing the Delta from a number of esteemed speakers, including Jerry Merrill and Jeff Mount from UC Davis. There was a great session on water quality and water supply on the Integrated Water Resources Program and integrated management efforts, attended by representatives from the state, local governments, Delta Stewardship Council, very informative discussions. We also spent, I think, at least I enjoyed this part of the presentation, was the spotlight on the Water Board's role in integrated water resource management, policies, planning, permits, and fundings. What really can we actually do on the ground? So we heard from, again, state representatives, policy experts, from people on the ground at the local level. And there was a lot of brainstorming and discussion about a lot of these ideas, and I think it gave many of us food for thought. I would recommend for future sessions that all the board members attend these. I think they're very informative. And I didn't know if Amy or Don, you would like to add anything about the sessions?
Yeah, actually, Dr. Horn, could you expand on this?
No, I think Patty did a good summary. I felt that this was probably the best WQCC that I've been to. It was much more substantive than the last one. Although it was more of us sitting and listening to people talk at us. But, it was interesting to hear. Always valuable to me is hearing what all the other regions are doing. And I suggested to Karen, what's Karen's last name?
Turkovich.
Kim, what's Karen's last name?
Karen Turkovich.
Turkovich, yeah. Thank you. That it'd be easier for us to pick up the phone and talk to other regional board members about how they're handling different issues. I mean, when I was trying to talk to other boards about how they did searches for executive officers, our old executive officer sent an email to the other executive officer to ask if the board member in that region would be willing to talk to me. I mean, it was just really cumbersome. I just thought, you know, why make it so difficult for us to talk to each other? One idea in particular that was interesting to me was learning that a lot of the in the Bay region, a lot of the monitoring that goes on is handled by the San Francisco Estuary Institute, and they've got a model for financing and et cetera, and it seems like, you know, we keep struggling with how to do really So higher level quality, scientifically valid monitoring on Lake Tahoe. And it seems like that's a model that might be useful for us up here. And, you know, there were other ideas like that 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 I heard that, anyway, I think it should be easier for us to talk to each other.
Yes, and I couldn't expand more on what Dr. Horn and Patty has said. It was a wonderful meeting, and I learned a lot. In that case, oh, yes, there is more on the report.
I'll just give you a few more items of interest. The Section 208 plan required by the Clean Water Act, there's a summary and written summary in my executive officer's report, but there's been some new developments. There's been ongoing negotiations between Nevada and the state of California regarding that plan, and I'm happy to report they've reached a compromise that also works well for us. We have been intimately involved in that process. This document will be going to TRPA this Thursday, and we will be speaking in support of it. It will then go to the state board for adoption in early next year, and our role will be staffing that report to the state board for their consideration of adoption. These two reports are kind of rare. Most across the nation, they aren't doing these reports anymore. They've replaced with other items, but for TRPA, it's very much embedded into their regional plan update, so they need to proceed with this. And on the regional plan update, that will be going before TRPA on December 12th. Again, it also includes all of the things that the regional board had asked to be included. Land use planning, air deposition, all the issues that we had wanted are in that document, we're pleased to say. So on the 12th, I will be joining Chloe Cripps from the Nevada Department of Environment Protection to testify in support of the plan that day. So another item I want to give an update is on Spalding Track. That you might like to hear what has happened since our last board meeting. Mr. Robinson has successfully connected his septic tanks on his two properties to the community wastewater system. So that's good news. He has also paid his fine. Mr. Neal continues to make good progress. He's engaged a local contractor to abandon his septic tanks, and not only his two properties, but the NANCO property. So Lassen County will be inspecting actually tomorrow. So I hope that will go well. I'm sure it will. And Mr. Neal has also paid his penalty. As you recall, Laura Winter successfully had her septic tank abandoned before the October board meeting. So that's all good. She hasn't paid her fine yet, but we will wait for it. Overall, I wanted you to know that staff has done an exceptional job working with the community over all these years to achieve compliance. So I know we focus on these a few enforcement items, but to give you context, there are 590 properties within the Spalding Track that are now connected to the community wastewater system. That's quite a, I think, a success. Septic tanks on another 40 properties have been abandoned, so that's good news too. This leaves about 32 properties remaining in violation of the basin plan prohibition. We anticipate with Neil's progress, and we will be down to 29. So it's expected that notice of violations will likely be issued to the remaining 29 property owners in the next few months. We hope they are incentivized by the actions taken by the board, and we are encouraging and cajoling them to try to get into compliance. It is our hope and goal to have all these 29 properties in compliance by the end of 2013. A little short Hinckley update. Again, there's a lot of information in your packet on that. But the EAR comments closed on November 5th. We have received comments from 19 Hinckley residents, many of them sometimes multiple comments, which is still okay, from the California Department of Fish and Game, the Native American Heritage Commission, Project Navigator, and PG&E. We are reviewing all these comments now, we'll be compiling them and writing response to comments to be released in December. And all of these letters are posted on our website. We also sent out a request for metals, namely manganese, in domestic wells in Hinckley Valley. We're basically asking anyone and everyone who has data on that to share that with us to the extent feasible. And as you know, we've received numerous complaints in the community about this problem. The comments are due back to us on November 26th. However, we certainly will accept any comments after that date as well. We plan to have a technical working session in the community in early December, invite government agencies, PG&E, scientists, whomever, and these are open to the public, where we kind of, I think we're going to kind of go down and look through this data and see what we have. Project Navigator is going to help us map this because they have capabilities we don't. And then when we have a sense of the data and we know what we know and we know what we don't know, I think the next step is the staff will then compile a staff report of some sort, and we will release that in December. And we hope to have a public workshop in early January. Our date's not set quite yet when that will be, but we're working on it. And the rest of the information is actually in your packet. We, as you know, give reports to the Community Advisory Committee on details of what we do, and so we make that readily available. That's all the items I had in my EO report, unless the board members had any questions about the report. If not, then I'll ask Mike Plasiak to give us an update on dairies.
Peter, do you have any questions?
No, thank you.
Keith, do you have any questions?
Yes, I have one concerning the Hinckley hexavalent chromium. I've read so much literature recently, I can't recall where I saw it, but I thought I saw some evidence of an effort to determine background levels by doing some research at Harper Dry Lake Valley. Does that ring a bell?
I might ask Lori if she has knowledge of that.
I don't, and I don't know if Mr. Sullivan has any background on that either. I'm not aware. I mean, I think there's been there's definitely monitoring wells that we've asked you to put in up in that area just to further delineate the plume. Kevin, do you have anything else?
Yeah, this is Kevin Sullivan, PG&E. There are the latest set of wells, or pardon me, several wells have now been drilled beyond sort of the last throat between the Hinckley Valley and the Harper Lake Valley. So we're starting to get data that I would describe as from the area where the Hinckley Valley flow starts to blend into the other flows that flow into the lake. And so we're just starting to assess that area.
Well, it just surprised me that monitoring wells would be installed so far from the plume, but maybe it's closer than I think.
Yeah.
And that is part of the reason that we're interested in getting that background peer review process underway, because we're starting to think that but when you get that far north, you're starting to see other effects. But it's admittedly a complicated technical topic that I think needs a deep dive by all concerned.
Well, thank you. I'm looking forward to hearing more about it.
Patty and the board members, this is Lori. I just wanted to correct one thing that I think, Patty, you said, that you may have just said the wrong month, but on the EIR comments, we did, Patty had all that correct in terms of who we received comments from, but we heard from our consultant who's preparing the response to comments that it's going to take some time to prepare the responses to the comments, as well as we have to revise the project area as it relates to this question that Mr. Dias just brought up about extending the project area much further north because of the continuing detections of chromium, you know, further north than we had originally envisioned. So we have to expand the project area, and that's going to take some level of effort by the consultants to update the EIR to include that additional area, that geographic area. So what we are planning in January, as I think Patty mentioned, is that we're going to bring you a summary of the issues raised during the comment period and kind of our path forward and where our direction, but we won't be bringing the EIR to you for certification in January. And the final won't be out until after the January board meeting, so it's more likely to be out in the February time frame, February, March time frame.
Okay. Keith, do you have any further questions?
No, but thank you for allowing me to ask that one.
Absolutely. Heck. Dr. Horn, do you have any questions?
No, thank you.
Mr. Sandell, do you have any questions?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
I'm now going to ask Mike Plazek if he would join us on and give us update on dairy activities in the Victorville area.
All right. Good afternoon, board members and staff. This is Mike Plazek, supervising geologist. As you're aware, we've talked about dairy strategy in the past, and we've had a four-pronged attack, if you will, and that still remains in effect, and that is, one, replacement water to the community that is affected by polluted groundwater from the dairies, two, source control, three, establishing and maintaining monitoring programs, and then four, groundwater cleanup. Where we are right now with replacement water, and I will direct you to Table 1 on Bait Stamp page 6-17. I'm going to kind of talk off of that, but where we are right now is that we have four dairies that are causing a groundwater pollution where a number of residences have been affected. In fact, the total number right now is 40 residences, and you can see from Table 1 from the column, the second column from the left, providing replacement water. It's N&M Dairy, Harmson Dairy, Hinkley Dairy, and BBD Heifer Ranch. We've had a monitoring program going on with them. We've been getting their monitoring reports, and we see nitrates now in the range between 20 and 60 milligrams per liter. We see TDS that's in the range of 800 to 3,000 milligrams per liter. So those numbers aren't varying much. We, you know, ups and downs here and there, but it's generally that's what we're seeing. The worst of the four is N&M Dairy, and that has been a focus for us for, as you will see in the upcoming board meeting, a enforcement action. In terms of salt or source control, what we have done is work on getting salt nutrient management plans and wastewater management plans from the dairies. 13-267 investigative orders were issued during 2011, and to all of those with the exception of N&M Dairy, which is under a cleanup and abatement order. And to date, what we have right now are, actually no, N&M Dairy was also required to produce the salt nutrient management plans and the waste management plans. As a side note, the salt nutrient management plans really focus on trying to eliminate the sources or areas where there are direct discharge through the ground to the groundwater. The waste management plans are more focused on stormwater and stormwater controls, so more of a surface water issue, if you will. Those are the two components of the source control that we're looking for. Out of the 13-267 or investigative orders that were issued, we have seven plans that are in our review now, and one plan that is late, and five that are pending. Their due dates haven't come in. They were staggered. The goal is to take one of these plans for the first one that came through the chute was Harmson Dairy. And what we want to do is build off of that, produce a cleanup and abatement order using the information provided through the investigative order process. And that's what we're currently working on right now. We have a draft CAO that's working its way between Victorville and South Lake Tahoe. And so we're making progress on that. But that should, if you will, blaze a path for the other dairies that are going to come right behind that and for whose salt nutrient management plans and waste management plans we have in hand and are under review. That's kind of where we are right now with respect to those. Continue to have the well sampled out there, and as I spoke to, the concentrations of nitrates and TDS. With respect to the third and fourth prong of our approach, as you know, with the economy where it is right now and with feed prices being very high and unavailable in some cases due to drought in the Midwest and also with the use of ethanol production, we have a number of dairies that are in our region that are financially very... We are about to... We have one. The N&M Dairy is selling its herd as we speak.
Are you still there?
Yes, we are.
Okay, we have
For some reason,
the alien movement.
We had a weird sound here.
No, I heard it too. This is Kim.
Okay.
That was the dairy music. back to the dairy, the strategy. So where we are with N&M Dairy is looking at selling part of its herd right now, and with the intent actually of removing all the herd and possibly other land buyers coming in. So that's a significant development that's come in. This is making it very challenging for us. And you're going to see that it's going to have an effect on the progress that we make with the dairies with respect to groundwater monitoring and with respect to cleanup. Those are going to have to be looked at more in the long term. Hopefully the economy is going to improve, but we've got to really focus on the first two that we talked about in getting the replacement water in place and ensuring that we've got source control and a methodology in place for the dairymen to put into place. The problem is going to be just the economics with it. And with the profit margins as slim as they are right now, it's going to be a slow road. So that's, just one thing I want to underline with you. We have been working very closely with the dairymen, and we'll continue to do that. So that's kind of where we are right now. I think there's one other dairy that is looking at selling its herd. I've heard on the grapevine, but, again, its economy is forcing that kind of a situation with them. Are there any questions on this item?
Peter, do you have any questions?
No questions. Thank you very much for the report, though.
Keith, do you have any questions?
No, thank you.
Dr. Horn, do you have any questions?
No, that's a good report, Mike, and the situation is troubling.
Mr. Sandell, do you have any questions?
Mike, what might happen if N&M Dairy sells their herd and then somehow finds a buyer for their land? That buyer will then be saddled with doing the cleanup.
Yes, there will be some responsibility inherent with that land sale. And we have had some discussions with representatives from N&M on that particular issue, and we're going to continue. As a matter of fact, we have a meeting with them within the next week or two to talk about this type of issue. But, I think...
Eric, I mean, this is Lori, and I know you may remember this or you may not, but I know that, an example of that kind of thing is the Desert View Dairy, which was purchased by PG&E. And
right.
We issued a cleanup order to the dairy to provide, to Mr. Reichen, who was the dairy owner, to provide replacement water to his neighbors, which on this table one, it shows that they're not providing replacement water, Desert View Dairy, but they did at one time, but then PG&E acquired the properties. So no one's getting replacement water under that order anymore. So what we did, though, was we had enforcement actions on the dairy owner when PG&E purchased Desert View Dairy. Then we issued orders naming PG&E along with Mr. Reichen. But Mr. Reichen did most of the work related to compliance. Occasionally PG&E would help him out when he was falling behind. But obviously that's something that is a legal arrangement that we don't have any say over. It's a real estate transaction with whoever's buying the dairy and how they work that out too.
Eric, do you have any further questions? In that case, thank you, Mike. That's an excellent report.
You're welcome.
I'm now going to ask Lori Kemper if she would please join us to give us the board an overview of the quarterly enforcement report, and board members, you'll notice, has a little bit different format this time to give you a sense of the items that are being considered and a little more detail about those. So I'm going to hand that over to Lori to talk to you about that.
Thank you, Patty. So the quarterly violation report covers the period from July 1st to September 30th, and it's found in your packet starting on base stamp 6-31. And this quarter, at the request of Patty and the board members, I prepared a cover memo, and Scott Ferguson helped me with this as well, and we talked to folks at the Office of Enforcement about how much information we can share, and the first memo that I signed October 17th was a very brief summary of upcoming enforcement actions, and then at the request of Patty, we expanded that, and Sue sent out an email this morning with a revised cover memo, and I don't know if all of you have that or not, but there is more detail that has been provided. in our summary. So what we're planning to do on a quarterly basis is to basically do two things in addition to the standard quarterly violation report, which is the Excel spreadsheet. We will provide this table that describes pending enforcement actions that are currently scheduled or planned to come before the board for their consideration during the course of the, you know, the next 6 to 12 months. And then I will also provide a summary of what's in the quarterly violation report itself, just kind of a summary of what are the types of violations or what might be unique to the specific quarter. Some quarters, we know that certain things are due, like there's annual stormwater reports that are due a certain time of year. We might be commenting on those. You might see those things show up on that kind of periodicity. Other, you know, the timber waiver, there's different permits that we have that have sort of standard reporting periods. So those might be when we see those violations, as well as field season would be when we might see more inspection violations associated with inspections. The other thing that is not in this memo that we are looking to provide you in the future is a way to describe informal enforcement actions taken during the quarter. So that might not be related to the violations in the quarter because, just to remind everybody, we're under a requirement, I think it's a legislative requirement, that we produce a quarterly violations report. So that's the minimum requirement that we have to meet, which is what are the violations that occurred during the quarter. So that's the quarter July 1, September 30th. We don't have to report all the enforcement actions, but in our quarterly violation report, if an enforcement action was taken during that same quarter, it will show up in the second to last column in the spreadsheet. It'll show staff enforcement letter or 13267 letter, notice violation. So that gives you an idea of enforcement actions that we took during that quarter, but they're related to the violations that also occurred in that quarter. So if we did some additional enforcement actions due to a violation that occurred in the previous quarter, you really don't have any way of seeing that or knowing about it unless you were querying our CWIC database. So that's something that I'm looking into providing you each quarter, where you'll get a sense of other actions that staff took, that so you get a sense of the work that we do that you may never see, never comes to the board for a formal action.
Let's see. Are there any questions? Peter, do you have any questions?
No, sir.
Keith, do you have any questions?
No, thank you.
Dr. Horn, any questions?
No, thanks.
Eric, any questions?
I don't have a question, but I do like the formatting and the additional information in this last multi-page or five-page memo that you did, Lori.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, I've done that. It's, I feel much more informed now.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And one of the things I wanted to let you know, too, is that we what we're providing you is really information that's publicly available. So this information is information that's on our publicly available violation database. We're providing maybe a little more information, just the nature of the facility and the discharger, just so you have a sense of, like, what it is and where it's located. And then on the status of enforcement, we're sharing with you information that we've generally already discussed, you know, with the discharger. So if we're saying we are planning to issue a complaint, an administrative civil liability complaint, we've already told the discharger that. So there may be cases in the future where we'll be more vague because we haven't actually come to the decision or haven't actually spoken to the discharger. And then the other thing I just wanted to remind the board about is that we cannot discuss issues surrounding these cases. That would be considered ex parte if we got into the details of any of these cases. But we do want the board to be able to provide general direction on the priorities, on the types of enforcement actions that you see and whether they seem appropriate. And, you know, some of the things I'm looking for in the future, for now or in the future, might be, are there any violation types or circumstances that you're seeing in this table where you would say it's not suitable for a confidential settlement? You want to be sure it comes before the board of public hearing. And that may not preclude a future settlement, but if there's something that you are aware of that you would want to give us direction that you'd rather have us not do that, that's the kind of direction that we are looking for. And Kim may have another opinion about that, but I've kind of cleared that through the Office of Enforcement in terms of the level of direction we're looking for.
Lori, we are considering a confidential settlement with the Aramol group.
We have issued the complaint. It's out on the street publicly, and we're planning for a hearing in January. They have actually put out a Public Records Request Act, so they're currently asking for all of our materials, and we're also, of course, required to produce our evidence here pretty shortly. We are open for conversations, and I guess at this point it would probably be more. What we often do is we'll have a pre-settle or a pre-hearing conference with all parties, so that would include Patty and the advisory team, along with the prosecution team and the discharger. So that kind of thing may happen between now and the January board meeting. There's a potential that we could consider settlement. If the discharger had something wanted to sit down and talk about it. So it is still a possibility, but there's nothing planned at this time.
My position on that is it should have a full hearing.
Okay.
Any further questions? In that case, we will go into closed session.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to just, at this point, Patty, can we just disconnect? Because I don't think we need to come back for the closing of the meeting unless there's anybody who thinks that we need to hear comments after. Are there'll be board reports, maybe?
No, not on this agenda. There won't be board reports.
Okay, so we can just sign off and we'll be off the line.
Okay.
Thanks, Lori.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.